Welcome back to the Thermodiet Podcast. I'm your host, Jayden Miller, and I'm here with my co-host, Mr. Tyler Woodward.
How are we doing today, Jayden?
I'm doing well. Wanted to say for the person who commented on my socks being in the camera, nobody asked you to look at my feet, so sorry.
Well, you're putting them out right there. It's almost like you want them to be looked at. Jayden got sponsored by Puma Socks recently.
Yep.
Not shoes, though. Only the sock brand.
Yep. Costco Puma specifically.
Costco Puma. All right. So today we're doing a Q&A. The first question happened to be, what socks does Jayden wear? So we already nailed that one. The second question is, onions and something else boost testosterone but block DHT. Should we prioritize DHT?
Which one would you prioritize? Oh,
onions and garlic. Which one would I prioritize?
DHT or testosterone? I mean, I feel like if you prioritize DHT, you're going to increase testosterone just because like DHT is kind of like further up in the pathway and it's going to be converted into testosterone. So it's less of
DHT is not converted into testosterone.
Testosterone goes, it's the other way.
Yeah, you can't convert back, which is why like you get with prostate, get high DHT and estrogen because your body starts converting all of the testosterone to DHT. So it gets stuck there.
Oh, okay. I thought the pathway worked both ways, but DHT can't be turned back into testosterone?
No.
Okay. But it can't be aromatized?
No.
And it has more potent of an effect of a masculine effect.
Yeah, androgenic effect, I think. Yeah. Yeah. I would just prioritize testosterone, personally. I wouldn't prioritize testosterone at the expense of DHT. Mm-hmm. So it's like there are things that you can get a 5-alpha reductase inhibitor, which is the enzyme that increases that converts testosterone to DHT. And I think that's what he's talking about. There are some natural 5-alpha reductase inhibitors in onion and garlic. I believe I could be wrong on that. But it's not like you're taking a supplemental or pharmaceutical dose. Mm-hmm. You're taking like something that's in your food. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't worry about onions and garlic specifically. I think they're both very beneficial foods as long as you digest them well. We were talking about on the last podcast about sulfur-containing amino acids. Onions and garlic are both rich in those sulfur-containing amino acids, so they're going to be beneficial in that aspect and for liver health.
In my opinion, if you're going to raise one, you're going to raise the other. Like pretty much you're doing the exact same things. There might be a couple more like minute specific things that you would do for DHT versus testosterone. But pretty much whatever you do to raise testosterone, DHT is probably going to be increased. And whatever you do to raise DHT, testosterone is probably going to be increased. So I don't really see much of a difference in your strategy there.
Yeah, I wouldn't use like the 5-alpha reductase inhibitors where it's like going to stop the conversion to DHT. Don't think you want that, which is what the balding drug is.
Finasteride.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, and that leads to a lot of like feminization and a lot less libido. So
I think it kills your family jewels too, right?
I mean, it definitely lowers your like libido. Your willingness to do anything. So
gotcha. What are the best snacks after 6 p.m.?
Ice cream.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, ice cream is a huge favorite of mine. I have been trying to get someone to make me sourdough chocolate chip cookies with a discard that I think could be delicious. If you can get some, what are those chips? The masa chips? I think they're called masa chips. They're like the ones fried in tallow. With some guac could be a good snack.
Yeah. Before bed, if I don't do ice cream, I would probably do like a protein shake, like a collagen protein shake or something to get some glycine in and help kind of relax the nervous system a little bit. And probably get like, if it's a protein shake, I'll probably add like some maple syrup or some honey or something to it to get some extra carbs to help kind of sustain that blood sugar throughout the night.
Yeah. Smoothie, ice cream, milkshake. Milk is going to be good. Like maybe add some honey. Mm-hmm. We're pretty boring. We're not the best snack people to ask.
Yeah. I'm trying to think, maybe like gummies would be another good gelatin source that you could use before bed.
Any kind of fruit.
Yeah. Chocolate.
You know, so when I go to Mexico, I ask my grandparents if we can make marmalade. So they get really good oranges for like pennies in the dollar. So I think I'm going to try that. I think that could be a good snack. I've never had it before. Oh, Jell-O, which you kind of said.
I would just make sure to avoid anything that is stimulating or extremely hard to digest because you're basically going to your body's going to be focusing on the digestive process versus the like winding down process and sleeping process. So definitely wouldn't eat like a giant meal right before going to bed. But I mean, if it's past six and you ate dinner at 5:30, then you're probably not going to have a giant meal later too. So
I had the Frappuccino recipe that Matt likes to make fun of because it's like 1400 calories. It wasn't like 1400. It's probably 800 calories, but it's dank. Mm-hmm. You do like vanilla, milk, chocolate chips, scoop of chocolate collagen. And I think that's it. Oh, and ice, a lot of ice. I just like chocolate. Oh, chocolate's also a good one. I don't know how we didn't think of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was thinking of like good magnesium sources.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Chocolate's a good one.
Have SIBO and not done well with antibacterials. Can increasing metabolic rate help?
I'd be curious into like what kind of antibiotics they're talking about. Because if it's something like amoxicillin, if it's something like in that realm, is probably going to do more harm than good because it's just wiping out all of that bacteria. I know that Ray likes penicillin. It's kind of hard to get penicillin legally in the US. So that one's going to be difficult. For SIBO, definitely the carrot salad is going to be great.
I'm waiting for you to say it.
I mean, a good coffee enema is definitely going to help lower the amount of bacteria that is in the in the intestine.
A lot of people swear by that.
Yeah. 100%. It's a great way to lower endotoxin as well. If you have endotoxin overload, it's very invasive, so it's probably not my first recommendation. But it's a solid recommendation at the very least.
I would also potentially look into a elimination diet. This is like one of those rare cases where I think it could fit because we evolved with these like selective antibacterials. I like stealing that quote from Jay Feldman, which are the polyphenols and flavonoids found in fruits and in roots like carrots. And there's all like coconut oil and stuff like that. So those kind of shaped our microbiome. But if you can't eat those foods and it's messing up your digestion, you might just be better off eating really, really simple to digest foods. It's like honey, maybe certain like really sugary fruits like berries and grapes.
Well ripened fruit at that too. Yeah. Make sure that your fruit is well ripened.
So if you're going to eat an apple, like take the peel off, all that stuff. Like don't minimize fiber and then a lot of meat, meat, honey.
Don't minimize fruit. Fiber or minimize do, fiber. Do minimize.
Well, you could potentially look at like if you do well with a carrot, which is insoluble fiber, you'd probably be good with that. But I would maybe try to minimize soluble fiber like pectin, which is in apples and like a lot of the peels and fruits and stuff.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I like the elimination tip. I think along with that, maybe implementing some more antibacterial foods into your diet too. So you mentioned coconut oil and carrots. Ginger is another great one, like some fresh
cinnamon,
ginger.
Cinnamon too, right?
Cinnamon, I think it has some antibacterial qualities. Yeah.
Honey's really antibacterial.
Yeah. Honey's a great one.
Did you know they found honey in like tombs, like ancient pyramid tombs, and it's just sitting like ready to go, like still edible?
Yeah.
So insane.
Yeah, it's awesome. Increasing stomach acid is also another really good tactic too. So whether you supplement with like betaine HCL or put some extra black pepper on your food and stuff like that, making sure that your stomach acid production is sufficient is going to help prevent more bacterial overgrowth in the small intestine.
Salting your food adequately too will probably help.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I think the marmalade and stuff.
Garlic.
Garlic.
Garlic's another one.
A lot of those herbs have some pretty potent antibacterial qualities. Mm-hmm. I think that should give you some general recommendations.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of anything else, but yeah, I think that's pretty good. And you really want to avoid fermented foods probably.
Yeah, definitely. If you have SIBO, definitely avoid fermented foods. Like even kimchi and sauerkraut, like definitely eliminate
it. And anything that you like, basically you can think about it is, if you can digest it, that means you're fermenting it. So like milk, like Jayden and I can pound milk like by the gallon. But if you can't digest milk, that means like your bacteria just eating it, in, which is the opposite of what you want to do. Mm-hmm. So that means for right now, you should probably not be eating milk. But this doesn't mean that you need to live like this forever. Like you want to get your SIBO under control, hopefully, and then start to phase things back in.
Yeah, definitely. Of course, for some people with milk, it has the opposite effect. So might clean them out. So maybe you might want to drink some more milk and get it going.
That's true. Raw milk has some probiotics too, which might help.
Yeah. I'm trying to think I would also recommend maybe supplementing with activated charcoal one to two times a week. that'll be really beneficial for helping pull out a lot of endotoxin and chelate some of the other nasty stuff that's probably in your intestine as well.
What is a reasonable calorie deficit I can start with to lose fat without compromising thyroid function and metabolic health in general?
I'm of the mindset that if you can increase your non-exercise energy expenditure without lowering your calories and see weight loss that way, that's my recommendation 100%. Cause like you can still eat at maintenance, but just get an extra 5 to 10,000 steps in a day and you're good.
And hit the gym and start putting on some muscle.
Yeah. So yeah, non-exercise energy expenditure would be everything that you do outside of the gym. So, you know, stand up at your desk and get an extra 5 to 10,000 steps in a day on top of your lifting 3 or 4 times a week and you should be golden.
But I think if you're looking for a general rule of thumb, I mean, there's no losing body fat without somewhat compromising your thyroid function and metabolic health. So the point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, I mean, there's things that you can do to protect the metabolic rate as much as possible, but inevitably there is going to be some tampering of the fire, so to speak.
I shouldn't say you can't lose body fat. I should say you can't be in a calorie deficit without somewhat compromising your thyroid function, metabolic health.
That's fair.
What I would do and what I've done slightly in the past is I would go really high carb, specifically sugars, and relatively low fat and see if you can get away with that. The problem is people don't find it to be as satiating, especially without the starches. I feel like starches are pretty satiating. So like do skim milk and you can make sure you're getting enough like liver and all those vitamins and minerals, but the low fat will help to theoretically increase your metabolic rate. So you'll have to pull from your own fat stores more and burn that versus the fat is coming in and replenishing that. I also saw, we talked to Georgie about this. He said that if you're under 15% body fat, you're going to have to, which we have no idea what she is, or he is, you'll have to eat less fat than you consume. But if you're over 15%, he said it's a kind of a different, like
you have to eat less fat than you burn.
Yes.
For energy.
Yeah.
At rest.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Not necessarily at rest. I think just overall.
Okay.
But if you eat more fat, you'll be have a hard time losing fat. If that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also important to recognize that, like, and I think no one talks about this, the whole calories in, calories out. It's like a lot of the fat doesn't get burned ideally. You want it to, and not stored either, you want it to get converted into steroid hormones.
Mm-hmm.
So, and no one has, I've never seen, I could be wrong, an idea of how many calories are go through that process.
Yeah, definitely. And then the fat that you do get at that point should be saturated fat too. Mm-hmm. I would probably stay away even from the monounsaturated fats because generally those are okay, but if you're limiting your fat intake, then the fat that you do get, you want to make sure it's saturated.
Maybe Ray Pete has talked about it. He used to do a spoonful of coconut oil with every meal, I think. And that really helped to stimulate his metabolic rate from the MCTs and the short chain triglycerides. Oh, you didn't talk about apple cider vinegar. Could be a good one for the antibacterial question.
Mm.
Putting some vinegar on your food or any of those.
Yeah, on your carrot salad.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, your thyroid is the regulator of oxygen consumption in your body. And when you are consuming less food, thereby producing less energy, your oxygen consumption is going to be diminished. So your thyroid should, if it's a healthy thyroid, it should decrease slightly. Mm-hmm. It's its job. So what Jayden said, I think you want to put on as much muscle as you can, increase your NEAT step count, get a lot of sunlight, and potentially you can, you know, maybe use some coconut oil topically and see if that will help at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty cheap. anything else you want to add?
Losing weight sucks.
Yeah.
So try and enjoy the process as much as possible and then work your way back up to maintenance as soon as you can.
What essential oils should I stay away from, if any?
I think all of them, in my opinion. I'm not a huge fan of essential oils. Capsaicin and clove are probably...
Is that essential oil?
Capsaicin. So yeah, I think it would be cayenne pepper, cayenne extract, something like that. That could be good for like rubbing on joints and stuff to help eliminate pain. Same for clove. Clove is like, if you get a good clove extract, it's kind of like an anesthetic.
Lavender is kind of interesting, but it's pretty estrogenic, right?
Yeah.
So is mint.
Yeah. Most of those are extremely, most of the essential oils are extremely potent forms of a lot of phytoestrogen. So, yeah, I just generally avoid all of them, honestly.
Yeah. I'm not a huge fan either. I know Cosmo Beauty puts some of her products. Oh, vanilla. I'm a fan of that's essential oil too, right?
Yeah. I think like most of my issues come whenever you are using them topically, because they're so potent, and the extraction process could or could not make them unstable, or change like the chemical structure of it. So
vanilla is too expensive to use topically.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think vanilla is pretty cool. It's actually like shown to increase DHT, I think.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I like vanilla, but most of the ones that are out there in the mainstream are just not great.
Not a fan. Mm-hmm. If you want to use them, but not my cup of tea or Jaden's. How much pregnenolone should one use and how often?
Dang, I forgot dosing. As far as frequency, I'm a big fan of microcycles. I like the 5-on, 2-off. You could also do it for like a month, take a month or two off and then do it for another month.
I have no idea.
Yeah, I can't think of the dose off the top of my head. It's been a while since I've looked at it. And the pregnenolone supplement that I use is a dropper, so I just do it by the amount of drops that I use. So I don't know. I forget the I did the math at one point, but I forget it now just because like...
How many drops?
I usually do 8 to 10 drops.
You put it in the belly button?
No, under the tongue. I do it sublingually. They say to do it topically, but... I don't like having to rub it in my skin and all that stuff.
Sublingual is like pretty much topically, I feel like.
Yeah.
It's like you have a slight barrier of absorption, mm-hmm. less than the skin, I guess.
Yeah, I definitely wouldn't recommend using like a cream or something sublingually, but whenever it comes to just a liquid dropper that's suspended, I have pregnenolone suspended in coconut oil. So, I mean, neither one of those are going to be harmful.
Yeah, I have no idea. Wish I had a better answer for you.
Yeah, sorry about that.
I eat beef and eggs every day, pretty much every day. Am I consuming enough B vitamins or should I supplement?
Beef and eggs every day?
Yeah, I mean, beef is not that great a source. It has B12, but it's not a great source. And B2, I think, as does dairy. But I'm not going to say you should supplement. What I'm going to say is you should look like...
Well, is that the only sources that they're getting? Because like,
that's true.
That's my thing is like, there could be a lot more in their diet that they're getting.
Yeah. I mean, it really depends what else you're eating. Sourdough has some B1, B2, B3. Orange juice has some B3, right?
I don't know.
Actually, I don't know about that. Could be wrong on that. Coffee has B2 and B3, niacin.
I'd say if you're rotating liver in a couple times a week.
Maybe not a couple times a week, but once a week.
I mean, depending on how much you eat at a time.
True.
So if you're eating 4 ounces, you could do it twice a week. If you're eating 10 ounces, probably just keep that to once a week.
Also depends on how much eggs you're eating. Are you consuming dairy, ice cream, cheese? A lot of questions we don't have the answer to. How much calories are you eating? How many eggs are you eating?
Yeah, there's more context that is needed there in order to be able to effectively answer that question.
Yeah. Pork is a really good source of B1, which is why I'm looking to get my hands on some pastured pork. Because
I feel like you've been looking for that for a while.
It's just, it's not cheap. Not cheap to get. It's a big investment to get. Mm-hmm. But I think getting some pork, which is mostly saturated fat, if it's raised properly, it's great. It's going to be a great add-on to your diet. As will some poultry that's properly raised. It has some amino acids like taurine that you don't find as much in animal foods or beef or pork. But I don't think it hurts to supplement with B vitamins. I would be careful with getting too much folic acid or B12. But B1, B2, B3, B6, B5, B7, all pretty much green light by me.
Yeah. Yeah, you'll probably be covered if you just supplement with some liver in there somewhere.
That too. Last question. What is the optimum BMI for tea production?
I usually like to recommend like that 12 to 13% range. You know, some people can get away with like 9% body fat. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the BMI are. I don't look at BMI. I look at body fat percentage.
Yeah, I don't know. I was thinking body fat as well.
Some people can get away with 10%, but I usually recommend that 12 to maybe even 15%, depending on who the individual is and how it's kind of distributed on their body and how they like to walk around.
I think a huge factor is going to be how much muscle mass you have too.
Definitely.
Like I would bet, and I could be wrong, but I would bet you see the strongmen and the powerlifters away from their competition when they're not really stressed have a humongous, huge testosterone. And it's like proportionally, right? So it's like they weigh 300 pounds, even if your testosterone's at 600 nanograms per deciliter, which isn't crazy high. It's like they have a lot of testosterone because it's so much of them.
If you're an average dude that is not a behemoth of a man like those guys, then that 12 to 15% range is probably going to be pretty good.
Yeah, for sure. And you can just hold more muscle mass at higher body fats too. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be a contextual answer for sure. I think the 10 to 15, 12 to 15 is going to be a good range. Prioritizing mostly saturated fat, a lot of the fat-soluble vitamins.
Usually anything over 15, like 20%, that's whenever it starts to get really bad in terms of like aromatization and stuff like that happening in the fat tissue.
I also think it's going to again matter on the how much muscle you have too. It's like proportional. But yeah, I would 15, I think is like probably the max I'd recommend. But just like you have people that are outliers at 9, you have probably people that are outliers at 20.
Yeah, and it also depends on like if you're doing it strategically too. Like, are you going to bump yourself up to 18 to really pack on some muscle for a few months and then cut back down to 12 or something like that? So yeah, it is contextual, but generally 12 to 15 is a good range.
Yeah, I had a long conversation last night at the gym with this guy, Wadi, who's coached Phil Heath, I think, and a ton of pro bodybuilders. And we were talking about diet and nutrition. He was telling me about, it used to be a huge whitefish diet. Because whitefish is so not fatty. So it was an easy way to get their calories in. And then it changed like tilapia, because tilapia is cheaper than like cod. And then we were talking about, I was like, so is there like an optimum diet that you see? And I was thinking like, it's kind of interesting because we're in this sphere where everyone is so willing to change their diet. But when you're an athlete that hasn't cared about their diet for the entirety of their existence, pretty much, right? Other than now they have to get in the show. Like, he works with pro wrestlers. He was a pro fighter for a couple of years. And he was like, you just have to I had an NFL player that was drinking beer 5 days a week. And he's like, I want to be a bodybuilder. He's like, all right, you drink beer 2 days a week instead of five? He's like, all right, I can do that. And I was like, well, like, do you try to get your player or your athletes to eat liver? He's like, dude, how many people do you think are actually eating liver? And I was like, well, some. he's like, hey, you can get people, you can't change people, which is interesting. Like, coaching is so much managing people less so than like putting the optimal plan together a lot of times, which is interesting to think about.
Yeah, definitely. The human being is a complex organism that it's hard to deal with in a lot of cases, for sure.
We suck. We're good. All right, guys, thanks for tuning in. I hope you guys enjoyed that. We do Q&As every once in a while, every couple of weeks. So make sure when you see them, throw your questions in the box. And until next time, be good.
Peace.